FAA's Randy Babbitt fields questions at AEA 2010. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. In our third and final part of Randy Babbitt's session from AEA 2010, we'll hear his answers to questions from attendees.
Paula says we have a couple of minutes for questions and answers. If there are areas that I didn't get into, this is your opportunity. Yes, right here.
What, is there going to be any difference in influence, you know, the TSA wants to get more than 4,500? Is there a level of difference between the repair station that's not on the airport versus the one that is? How do they justify that difference?
Yeah, that's a good question. If you didn't hear, the TSA, for security reasons, is concerned about, you know, the 145 operations. One of the problems that I have, that's a very good question. We obviously look at a repair station from one set of criteria, which does not include the background of the people who are working there, other than the fact that they're, you know, appropriately qualified to do what they're doing. The TSA has another issue of security. And on and off the airport can make a difference. One, you're in a secure airport environment, and therefore might have access to, you know, the aircraft and so forth. There's a lot of questions. I don't have the answer to that. It's a TSA question. One of the things that I'm struggling with is we haven't had a TSA administrator now in almost a year. And unfortunately, each of the ones that have been proposed have had some background issue that they've chosen not to go forward with. But anyway, we're still in the look. My point is I don't have anybody to go meet with over there. Everybody's acting, and therefore they won't take any real positions, and it makes it difficult for us. So I'm looking forward to the day when we can go over and meet with the TSA, when they have an administrator who has the authority to do some of these things. We have other issues. We have, I don't know that anybody in here gets involved with them, but through the fence issues where we have homeowners that live on an airport property, we have small businesses that aren't repair stations that do other things on airport property because of shipping. You have rail stations. I mean, lots of issues come up that the TSA should be involved in airport security, and we don't have a conduit to talk to them. But your question is a good one, and I hope to resolve that when somebody gets here from the TSA. So. Other questions?
Good morning, sir. A number of years ago, after a fair amount of congressional hubbub, the advocacy role that the FAA had been playing for decades was needed from the supposed charter with everything that's been occurring over the last couple of years, misinformation on the Hill, so forth and so on, it would seem, especially since you have unique expertise that's been missing for a while, that the FAA may have an opportunity again to resume a role of advocacy on behalf of aviation and to correct some of the things that are going on out there. Mm-hmm. Are you, as administrator, willing to take that role on again on behalf of the FAA?
Thank you. The issue came about, they did, the original charter of the FAA said we are to promote two things, the aviation industry and safety, and there were those who felt that we should no longer promote the industry. I've taken the position that I can promote the safety and efficiency and the growth of the industry by safety measures, and if those overlap, someone will have to tell me where I've crossed the line, but I don't know that you can separate those two things. I don't think if we ran an unsafe system that we'd see the passenger volumes that we have. People just can't appreciate how incredibly safe this industry is. We are now, knock on wood, we are, I think, 44 months now we've had one aircraft accident. It was a tragedy. One is one too many. We're 42 months and we have one accident killed 49 people. We're going to kill 900 people this year in this country at railroad crossings. We're going to kill 600 people on foot by train. I mean, people that are walking the track. It's unbelievable the focus that we get. We had a terrible tragedy in Washington with the Metro. 9 people died. It was front page story in Washington, and it was no story at all 2 days later. We had a tragedy on the Hudson where 2 VFR aircraft collided. It was on YouTube. I had 3 hearings on the issue, 9 people. We get so much scrutiny, but I am taking the position to promote what we do from the safety side. There are also, I'll digress for another second, they say, well, you don't have customers. Well, I disagree with that, and I have testified to that, and will do so in Congress. We do have customers. When a person calls a flight station and or flight service station and says, you know, I want a flight plan, I want the weather, I want this, I don't know about the rest of you, but I think that's a customer, and I think they have they've paid their taxes, they've paid their fees, they have the right to the service that we provide, and I think it should be the best, and I think it is the best. But at the end, I will do what I can to make certain people appreciate what this industry does, what it contributes to the economy.
In a moment, Randy Babbitt on a new relationship between the FAA and the people who build its systems. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits? That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. We're listening to FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt's Q&A session from the recent AEA convention in Orlando. It was the first question in this segment which prompted the administrator to preview a proposed change in the way companies are invited to provide the FAA with the systems and equipment it needs.
Yes, sir.
Well, yes, sir. First of all, thanks all for coming today. You spent quite a bit of time earlier on talking about the next generation air transport system. We in our industry have a lot of that capability available today. My kind of question to you is, after some specific instances, and I'll use one that's very recent down the go-live in the GOMEX area with ADS-B, where now we're seeing that STCs are actually required to install transponders in many of these helicopters. It seems to be very much a technical solution to an operational problem that's really inducing a lot of costs on operators, really slowing down the adoption. What kind of guidance your office is providing within the FAA to try to help encourage the adoption really of what are FAA-led technology programs?
Mm-hmm. No, that we are, I am pushing about as hard as I can push. The good news is, everybody in the FAA is pushing. We're working very hard to sort of put people together. And that you mentioned the Gulf, that operation going live with ADS-B in the Gulf took the efforts of everybody in the FAA. I think there was a sense of common victory when we went live out there. There wasn't any part flight standards, air traffic control. Tech ops, everybody involved, the centers, all were involved in making that happen. But when I talked about we don't do a good enough job, people don't appreciate the volume of that airspace. That's a quarter of a million miles of airspace that now has positive control. For a decade, we were flying around in 10-mile grids like they used to do in World War II. You'd report in and out of a grid, and it was the clunkiest system in the world, and you couldn't fly direct, you couldn't do anything. Today, you can fly direct anywhere, positive control, just like you could in the New York area. So it's a phenomenal change. But my own education, when I got down there and talked to the helicopter folks, I said, this is great, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, they probably run 100 of these things a day out there. We carry 10,000 people a day on and off those rigs every single day. Think of the safety improvement that we've done there. So we've gone live there. We've gone live in Philadelphia, Louisville. We're going live in a couple of other places soon. So this innovation and you know working across the lines has been really helpful. One thing, and I don't want to go too far here because it's not terribly public information yet, and it'll be rolled out in mid-April. But we are developing a concept when we talk about innovation. One of the things that it would be of interest to this group, we're looking at a change in some of the traditional ways that we would invite people to manufacture equipment. And that theory would be that instead of telling you the design specs quite accurately what we want built, we would tell you what we want to receive from the product and let you design and build it. And there will be a program that'll be coming out in mid-April, which is not too far from now, that'll highlight a little more of that. I think this industry in particular is going to be very excited about that. It's going to give a lot of smaller companies an opportunity to sort of showcase their ability to be innovative and bring out some out-of-the-box thinking, which I don't think ever hurts. I hope that answered your question. Any other questions? We've got two right in the front. Yep.
There's so much good information here this morning, and I really appreciate you being here. We all struggle with trying to understand the rules and regulations and what's going on. Is there any periodical or any resource that you look at or that you feel disseminates the most accurate information that we can pass on to the people that we work with in our industry?
In terms of a conduit of information flow? Well, we're really looking at that. That's a great question because we're taking a really hard look right now, and we started the look internally. How do I disseminate information inside the FAA? If I can't do it there, I have no hope of doing it outside of the FAA. And it is quite complicated because we have folks who never even turn on a computer, so we'd have to phone message them. We have folks that go to the web pages periodically. We have folks that actually would do quite well if we would just Twitter them or put them on a blog or put it on Facebook. So every generation, and trust me, we have them all, 48,000 employees. We've got everything from, you know, baby boomers to X-Gen. I think we've hired some Y-Gen. I'm not sure. But finding vehicles to communicate with targeted areas is difficult. So we try blast messages now with pilots where they can subscribe to email messages to update. That seems to work pretty well, and I actually get that myself. I'm just one of the numbers in there, and it comes to me, and I find it interesting. So if anybody has ideas, this is one of these that I'd rather listen to you than prescribe how I think is best. But if people have better vehicles that they see or they think would be a more active conduit to put information out, we're all ears. We have the technology, but please let us know. So, yes, sir.
I'd like to know what your official opinion about user fees, which greatly affect our industry.
The best answer I can give you is you're breaking up. I can't. No, this is not an editorial forum. I'm not a proponent of that. This administration has reversed the policy. There was a push in the previous administration that said user fees were the good solution. I think that the real challenge is to find a way that everybody pays for their fair share. But, you know, that's easier said than done. That's a very subjective question. But I'm very comfortable. I think the general aviation groups, I think the airlines, nobody's perfectly happy, and that means we probably come to a pretty good answer. They're going to raise some general aviation fuel fees a little bit. They're going to change some other fees for the carriers. But user fees themselves are off the boards. So unless this administration were to shift its policy, everything we're looking at in 2011 and 2012 budgets does not include user fees. Okay. Well, listen, thank you very much. You've been a great, attentive group. I really enjoyed coming here. It's always good to meet with folks that understand this business and have an appreciation and love for it that I know everybody here does. And again, you've been wonderful partners with the FAA. The collaboration that you have provided proves, I think, to a lot of folks that this is the way that industries get better and stay. We're not number one in the world just by accident. We're number one in the world because we have great people like you to work with. And I appreciate your time here, and I wish you the best of luck. Thank you.
Randy Babbitt is our current administrator of the FAA. Learn more at faa.gov. Find out more about the Aircraft Electronics Association at AEA.net. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.